The Lord gave me these few thoughts. I'd had them for a while, but He really laid them on my heart last night. It was quiet in the dorm, and everyone was sleeping but me. And the Lord just came in and really blessed my soul and gave these thoughts afresh to me. I'd thought of them before, and He had blessed me with different things, but I thought I'd share those thoughts with you tonight, if it'd be all right. I was thinking how Jesus, when He was walking on this earth, did so many, many miracles. He healed bodies and gave people instructions that were something they'd never heard before. The many, many things that He did when He was here, His 3.5 years of ministry. But the most probably marvelous thing was whenever He raised Lazarus from the tomb. Whenever He was there, and if you would turn with me, please, to John, the 11th chapter. John tells it in detail. The other Gospels, not so much. But John really details a lot about how Jesus knew that Lazarus was sick. In the 11th chapter of St. John, it says, there was a certain man named Lazarus. Now, he says that it was Mary, which anointed the Lord's with an ointment on his feet, but she did that later. He's just identifying who it was. But he said Lazarus was really sick and Jesus was away. He was a few miles away when the word came to him. And he told his disciples that were with him in the 4th verse, "This sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God might be glorified thereby." God had a plan right here in this sickness. And He was wanting to do something that was going to get the people's attention and prepare their hearts and their knowledge about the resurrection. He was getting them ready with this death of Lazarus. And the disciples noticed that Jesus just tarried. He didn't get alarmed. And yet they knew that He cared about Lazarus and Martha and Mary. And He was there 2 days. And His disciples said unto Him, "Master," in the 8th verse, He said, "We'll go quick. We're going to go now to Judah, where Lazarus is." And they said, "The Jews of late have sought to stone thee. Goest thou thither again?" And Jesus said, "Are there not 12 hours in the day? If any man walk in the day, he stumbleth not, because he seeth the light of this world. But if a man walk in the night, he stumbleth, because there is no light in him." He's letting them know, "I'm going to go because there's darkness there. And I'm going to bring light." And after these things, He said to them, "Our friend Lazarus sleepeth, but I go, that I may awake him out of his sleep." Now His disciples thought it was a natural sleep. Excuse me. That he was just sleeping and resting and that he was okay. But what Jesus really meant was that he had died, and he knew it. I'm sorry. He knew it in his spirit. Because God had let Jesus know, "There is a plan here that I want you to do." Should I bring the mic closer to me? Okay. Can you hear me better? Can you hear me? Okay. I just don't want to be a mouth up here. All right. Tell me, though, if I need to be louder. But I'm talking here in the 11th chapter of St. John about Lazarus and how God had a plan here. He was wanting this to be something that would get the people's hearts prepared. And so it was that he let Jesus tarried after he knew Lazarus was sick, and he let Lazarus die. And Jesus said unto them plainly, and this is the 14th verse, "Lazarus is dead. And I'm glad for your sakes that I was not there." I'm glad that he died. "To the intent ye may believe. Nevertheless, let us go unto him." And Thomas, which is called Didymus, unto his fellow disciples, said, "Let us also go, that we may die with him." Because they already knew that the Jews were trying their best to destroy Jesus. They'd already tried once to stone him, tried to push him over a hill, and they'd not been successful. It was not Jesus' time to go, and it was not his way to go. And so the disciples prepared to go with Jesus. They went to Bethany, which is close to Jerusalem. That's where Mary and Martha and Lazarus lived. And many of the Jews had come to comfort Martha and Mary because they were friends. Now, I believe Scripture doesn't say this, but I think that these people, Mary and Martha and Lazarus, had some financial influence there, that they had some money. And Jesus often stayed at their home when he was in that area because they probably had extra room for him to stay. They had the means to feed the disciples, which you think of that, 12 men and maybe some others. That was not just a small little crowd to feed. And so it was that they often had stayed at Martha and Mary's house whenever they were passing through that way. And so when they came, Martha, when she heard that Jesus was close by, she just got up from the group that was there crying with them, and she ran to meet Jesus. But Mary stayed back. Now, we often have Martha in this category of being the one working in the kitchen and not concerned about taking care of her spiritual needs. But in reality, really, if you look at it, Martha also cared about the spiritual things. And Martha had a tender heart, and she took off to Jesus. And this conversation that takes place here is very interesting because Martha and Jesus have this visit about the resurrection. They believed in the resurrection. The Jews did. Now, the Sadducees did not. But the Jews believed that there was going to be, and we believe this, that there would be a resurrection of the body at the last day. So this was already an established fact among the Jews way before Jesus came into the picture among them. And so Jesus said to her in the 23rd verse, "Thy brother shall rise again." And Martha said, "Oh yes, he will, in the resurrection and at the last day." And Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. He that believeth in me, though he were dead, yet shall he live. I'm the resurrection. I'm the one that resurrects people from dead. I bring about life. I'm the light of this world. And whosoever liveth and believeth in me shall never die." And he asked her, "Believest thou this? Do you believe this?" He was questioning her faith, wasn't he? And what did Martha say? "Yes, Lord. Yea, Lord, I believe that thou art the Christ, the Son of God, which should come into this world." And when she had so said, she went her way, and she said to her sister Mary, she said, "Come, the Master wants you. He calleth for thee." And as soon as she heard that, Mary got up, and she went to Jesus. Now, Jesus was not yet come into the town, but was in that place where Martha met him. So he was on the road. He was not quite yet to Bethany, where he was to be, where they lived. And the Jews which were with Mary, they said, "Oh, let's go with Mary. She's going to go to the tomb and mourn." And so they got up and went with her, thinking that she was going to go to the grave. But instead, she went to meet Jesus. Then when and this is the 32nd verse, "Then when Mary was come where Jesus was and saw him, she fell down at his feet. And she said, 'Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother would not have died.'" She's a little bit scolding, isn't she? Now, if you had not tarried, or if you had come right away when the message reached you that my brother was sick, he would not have died. But you waited too long, Jesus. And Jesus therefore saw her weeping, and the Jews also weeping, which came with her. And he groaned in the spirit and was troubled. I find that interesting because he already knew God's plan here, that God was going to have him raise Lazarus from the dead. But yet he sympathized with their grief. And you know, today Jesus does that also with us. When our hearts are heavy, and we're grieving, and we're sad because a loved one has left us here, Jesus realizes that is true grief, and it's sorrow to our heart. And he knows about that grief. And here is the shortest verse in the Scriptures. Jesus wept. The 35th verse. He cried with them. Then said the Jews, "Behold how he loved him." Jesus must have really loved Lazarus. And some of them said, "Could not this man which open the eyes of the blind have caused that even this man should not have died?" Why didn't he come earlier? He could have prevented Lazarus from dying. And Jesus, as he was groaning in himself, he had them take him to the grave. And Martha, the sister, she said, "Oh, he's been in the tomb 4 days, Jesus. He stinks. I don't know if we should roll the stone away. I don't know if you need to see his body." But they obeyed what Jesus said. He told them, "Roll that stone away." And they did. They obeyed Jesus. And Jesus lifted up his eyes. This is the 41st verse. He didn't pray a long, wordy prayer. You know, sometimes we think a lot of words is what will reach the heart of God. I believe myself it's the grading of the Spirit within us. It's the heart condition, how we are grieving or how we are approaching the Lord, how we are saying, Lord, within ourselves, we can pray the words, I am asking the Lord, not that I am worthy, but I am pleading with you, God, please do a miracle here. Please do something here, Lord, that I need, something that will help bless the souls involved, not just for myself, but also for those involved. It's the attitude of the heart that reaches God. And so Jesus didn't say a lot of, like I said, big long sentences and a lot of words. He just lifted up his eyes to heaven. Kind of like that sinner that lifted up his eyes there in Luke, the 18th chapter. Father, be merciful to me, a sinner. Well, Jesus just lifted up his eyes and he said, Father, I thank thee that thou hast heard me. And I knew that thou hearest me always, but because of the people, see, because of the people, we have to consider the people, the others involved, which stand by, I said it, that they may believe that thou hast sent me. And when he had thus spoken, he cried with a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth. And he that was dead came forth, bound hand and foot with grave clothes. Thank you. And his face was bound about with a napkin. He was definitely, quote, dead. It was not he was unconscious. He wasn't just laying in that tomb. Because some say, well, you know, maybe he's unconscious. No, he was dead. He had a napkin around his face. And he was laying there dead. He had no breath. Nothing at all there. So whenever he came out of that tomb, they had to unwrap him from the grave clothes and the spices that they had already put around Lazarus as a dead man. And I know we would have been shocked. I would have liked to have seen it, but we even would have been shocked if we'd been there to see a man come out of that tomb. It would almost be, you might say, spooky. It would make tingles go down your back to see somebody just come out of the tomb like that, bam, and you knew they'd been dead. And it would be like, oh, I've never seen this before. It was a miracle, just plain as it could be. And the Jews that had come with Mary, they were amazed too. And like people do, what did they? They went and started telling it around. They went to Jerusalem. They began to tell their neighbors, you know what we saw? We saw Lazarus come out of the tomb. He was dead. He'd been there for 4 days, and he was already wrapped in his grave clothes and had spices on him for his body, you know, to be embalmed, and he's gone. He came back. And they were telling it, and the word just went like wildfire, like they say. And the word went around, and people were amazed. And you would think that everybody would rejoice. But the Pharisees and the Sanhedrin did not rejoice. They were angry because Jesus did it. Now, if one of them had done something miraculous, that would have been different. They would have been in their, quote, circle. They would have been in their clan or their clique. But because it wasn't one of their cliques, it wasn't one of them in their circle, which they couldn't have done it anyway, but I'm just making a point here. They were angry because it was Jesus, that man that's upsetting the world and changing everything and doing miracles, and he's not coming under our rule, and he's doing stuff on the Sabbath. It's that man that's doing this, and we don't like him. Now I'm talking about how the Sanhedrin and the Pharisees looked at Jesus, because they were jealous of him. He was taking away their system of government in the way they knew it. And because they were not willing to humble their hearts and talk to Jesus and ask him about things, instead they were resisting him and not understanding exactly what he was doing. They were angry because he had done this miracle. And they said, now everybody's going to believe on him. And it's going to cause a riot. They're forecasting ahead, predicting, And we're going to be overthrown by the Romans. The Romans are going to come in with their troops because of what Jesus did, and the Jews are going to be pushed down again. They're predicting this, trying to stir up the people and make the people angry at Jesus for doing this, for raising Lazarus up. And so the high priest, who is Caiaphas, just a minute, say his name for me, Caiaphas, I always stumble on his word, he told the Sanhedrin, he said, "You don't know anything. Don't you know that at the Passover, we always let one man go and we put one man to death for the people?" Here, that's in the 49th verse. It says, let's just read it there. "And one of them, named Caiaphas, being the high priest that same year, said unto them, 'You know nothing at all, nor consider that it is expedient for us that one man should die for the people, and that the whole nation perish not.'" See, we don't have to have the Romans come in and destroy us because of this deed that this man did. "What we can do is, and this spake he not of himself, but being high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus should die for that nation." Falling right into the plan of God without knowing it, but it was an evil plan actually and from his heart. "And not for that nation only, but that also he should gather together in one the children of God that were scattered abroad. Then from that day forth they took counsel together for to put him to death. Jesus therefore walked no more openly among the Jews, but went thence into a country near to the wilderness, into a city called Ephraim, and there continued with his disciples." Jesus knew in his spirit this had caused the Sanhedrin and the Pharisees to be angry more than ever at him. So he was careful to not expose himself to the people openly for a while. But he did go to a dinner. He went to a dinner later. He went to the Passover in Bethany, where Lazarus was. This is starting in the 12th chapter of St. John. And Lazarus was there to eat. Now you think about this. This man was completely resurrected. He had been in a tomb, and now he's sitting at a table eating food. He was not just half resurrected, not a ghost. He was a body. He was eating food again, and he was able to talk to the people, and his body was functioning again, normal, just like it had been before. It's a miracle. It was a miracle. And the people came not only to see Jesus, but they came to see Lazarus, who was raised from the dead. And the Pharisees that were so against Jesus, they even wanted to kill Lazarus. Because of him, a lot of people are believing. And so it was that they were there eating, and this is where Mary actually came in with the ointment from she brought it in, and she so adored Jesus that she knelt down at his feet and she washed his feet with the ointment and wiped his feet with her hair. That's the third verse. "And the house was filled with the odor of the ointment, very costly." They said probably it was about worth 30 pieces of silver, which in that time was about a month's wages for some people. So I believe Mary and Martha, like I said, were a family in Lazarus that had some money and influence. But they were humble in their hearts. They didn't let that affect them. But in their hearts, they were humble, and they were willing to come to Jesus and listen to him and learn from him. And so this is there when Judas Iscariot, he was there with the disciples, and he was the one that carried the money bag, the treasure, for the disciples. You know, normally thinking when they would go to towns and they didn't have a place to stay, they probably had Judas Iscariot go and buy bread at a bakery place or someplace so they would have food to eat, or go to the market and get fish. So they did have a little treasury of money for them to buy with when they needed it. And Lazarus was the one that kept the money. I'm sorry, Judas. Judas Iscariot in the fourth verse. But whenever he saw Mary do this, he had a bad attitude. In his heart he thought, well, Jesus shouldn't let her do this. Why, this is expensive, her wasting that. And so he said to Jesus in the sixth verse, Well, in the fifth verse, why was this ointment sold for 300 pence and given to the poor? This he said, not that he cared for the poor, but because he was a thief and had the bag and bare what was put therein. Then said Jesus, let her alone. Against the day of my burying hath she kept this. For the poor always ye have with you, but me ye have not always. He said, don't bother her. She's done this because God has ordained it to be. It's up to my day of burial. She's done this to glorify God and to honor me, knowing that I'm going to soon, not her, Mary didn't know it, but Jesus knew in his spirit he was soon to be in the tomb himself. It doesn't tell it here, but if you turn over, I think it's in Matthew where he tells that from that point on, Judas Iscariot went out and he talked to the Sanhedrin and he said, how much will you give me for betraying Jesus? I think that's in Matthew. Let me find it here. The last part of Matthew 27 or 28. No, it's 27 right in there. He went out. No, it's before that. I didn't write that down. But it's right in here where he said, he went out and he asked them, how much would you give me for this, for Jesus? And that's why they said probably the 30 pieces of silver is about what Judas Iscariot thought that that ointment would have cost. And so that's why he reckoned with them on the 30 pieces. Just a minute, I thought it was right here. If you find it, you can tell me where it's at. 26. Okay. Because when I'm looking through here in a hurry, I tend to not see it. Matthew 26 and 15. Okay. Yeah. Yes. He went out and he said to them, what would you give me? And they bickered and they said for about 30 pieces of silver. So from that time on, Judas Iscariot looked for the opportunity to betray Jesus from that time. So you put the scriptures together and you can kind of see the time frame there. And the reason why, and I think I said this before, I kind of forget where I say this, but they said that John and Jesus favored a little. John and Jesus were cousins, their mothers or sisters, and they said by natural look, John and Jesus favored some, and they did not want to make a mistake and get John. They wanted to make sure they got Jesus. So they wanted Judas Iscariot to make sure to pick out which one was Jesus so that they didn't mistake him for John. Now that's just something I've read in history. But anyway, so it was that Jesus, we know how he was taken not long after that by a band of soldiers. He was there in the Garden of Gethsemane just praying quietly with his disciples. And they came in with torches and swords, thinking they were taking a bandit. But Jesus was mild, and he let them take him. He did not fight them back, but he let them. He did not resist. He simply let them arrest him and take him off and mock him, put a robe on him, as we heard this morning or in Sunday school, maybe it was purple and red, where he was mocked and tried and never given a fair trial. You think of it was done in the night. And how many people are up in the night like that normally? Not too many usually. They're usually asleep, but I believe there was a put together crowd to be there to instigate and to chant Jesus to be crucified. And he went through the mockery of the trial and all. He was put into the tomb. He was buried in a tomb that was made for a rich man. If you want to turn with me to Matthew, the 27th chapter there, it has more about it. Because the disciples were poor, they didn't have the means or know where to put the body of Jesus. And Joseph stepped up, this rich man. He stepped up and he said, he can be buried in my tomb that I have prepared for my own self. But it's a fresh tomb. No one has been put in this tomb yet. It's for my family, but I've just had it made. They would take these tombs, and I haven't been there. I've seen pictures of it where they call the garden a tomb where Jesus was buried. It was made out of stone. But they put Jesus' body there. It's the last part of the 27th chapter. 58 verse of Matthew 27. Joseph, when it was come evening, 57, there came a rich man of Arimathea, and named Joseph, who also himself was Jesus' disciple. And he went to Pilate and begged the body of Jesus. Then Pilate commanded the body to be delivered. And when Joseph had taken the body, he wrapped it in a clean linen cloth. And he laid it in his own new tomb, which he had hewn in the rock. And he rolled a great stone to the door of the sepulchre, and he departed. Joseph did all of this in haste, because it was coming to the Sabbath day, which is Saturday, and they were told not to touch any dead body on the Sabbath day. And so Joseph was in a hurry to try to do this before the Sabbath started, so that he would not be defiled. And that's why they did not really wrap Jesus' body totally and put spices around it, because it was so close to the Sabbath. That's why the women put together their spices, and they were going to go on the early morning of the first day of the week, which is our Sunday, and they were going to put spices around his body and embalm him properly. In their mind, that's what they were thinking to do. Now, I don't know exactly who they thought was going to roll the stone away, but perhaps they thought they would persuade one of the soldiers, because the Sanhedrin had gone to Pilate, and they said, you know, they called Jesus a deceiver, and John talks about this. This man, Jesus, he said that he was going to be rising out of the tomb on the third day, and they said, you know, we probably ought to put a guard over the tomb to make sure that his disciples won't come and steal his body away and claim he was resurrected like Lazarus was. So what we need to do is put guard around the tomb to keep the disciples from coming and stealing his body. And Pilate said, you have your wish. Go ahead and put the guard there. So perhaps the women thought, well, when we get to the tomb, we can maybe persuade a couple of the soldiers to roll that stone away so we can go in and put spices on his body. But when they got there, they were surprised. They were shocked. And I would have liked to have been there too to see that. To come there and see the light, and to see the angel, hear the angel say, he's not here. He's risen, like he said he would be. He's away from the tomb. He's gone. And they looked in, and they saw, I think it was John's details about how he saw the tomb empty, and the napkin, which had been around Jesus' head, it was laying there on the shelf where his body had been. I'm just telling the story. We know the story. It's familiar to us all. And John made note of that because, according to some historians, one of their customs in the Hebrew country there was whenever they would eat a meal, if they enjoyed the meal and they planned to come back again, they would fold their napkin up and put it there by the plate or by the place where they had eaten. And so that's why John made note of that napkin. The napkin was there. It was folded. Jesus was going to come back. He left that napkin. I'm coming back. I'm going to come back and eat with you. And so we find that the disciples saw him in the upper room. Different things happened. But they were out fishing. They were concerned about taking care of the financial needs of their families. Because by this time now, after Jesus had been in the tomb and been resurrected, you know, you think about it naturally, they were probably starting to financially feel, we need to supply some means for our family. You know, Peter had a wife and family, and they probably had some children there, and they probably were thinking, we need to go out and fish. That's what they were fishermen. We need to go back to our work that we know so well and fish and bring in some fish to feed our family and supply for our financial needs. So they were out there on the sea fishing. And what did they see? In the 21st chapter of St. John, they didn't catch anything that night. And when the morning was come, now, and we're on the fourth verse of John 21, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples knew not that it was Jesus. Then Jesus saith unto them, Children, have you any meat? He called out to them. Had to holler pretty good to get out to them on the sea. And they answered him, No. And what did he say? Well, cast the net on the other side, on the right side of the ship, and ye shall find. So they obeyed. They must have felt like, that's Jesus. Now, they had seen him before in the upper room, but they knew it was Jesus in their spirit. And they cast their nets on the other side of the ship, and the ship, or the nets, were filled. It was just pulled in, the fish. And Peter then, when he knew it was the Lord, in the seventh verse he said, he just jumped in the water. He took off. He girded his fisher's coat about him, and he cast himself into the sea, and he took off toward Jesus. And the other disciples came in a little ship, for they were not far from land, but as it were 200 cubits, dragging the net with fishes that they had just caught when they had obeyed Jesus. And as soon as they were come to land, they saw fire coals there, and the fish laid thereon and bread. Jesus had a meal ready for them. He had been in the tomb, and now he was here at the table at their way of eating. He had made a fire. He had fish on the coals, some bread, something that he knew would appease their appetite physically. He said, Bring of the fish that ye have now caught. And Simon Peter went up and drew the net to land full of great fishes, 153, for all there were so many, yet was not the net broken. John paid attention to little details, didn't he? Jesus said to them, Come and dine. Come and eat with me. I want you to share in the food I have. And you know, sometimes the best way to get acquainted with people is to eat with them, is come and have a meal. And Jesus, he had been in the tomb, but now he said, I'm going to feed you. I'm coming to feed your physical needs, to take care of them, and also to take care of your spiritual. Because he talked to them, and he told them, especially John, Peter, the disciples, he said, I want you to follow me. I want you to come after me. I want you to go and feed my sheep, like I just fed you here at this table. I want you to go and feed the people here. Give them the gospel. Give them spiritual food. Yes, maybe take some means and take care of their physical too. That's important. But more important of all, tell them about me and what I've done for you and my Father in heaven who sent me. Tell them what you've seen. And don't be out fishing now in the nets if it's out in the sea. But you go fish for men. And he talked to them. And then Peter, real interesting little conversation here from the 19th verse. Then spake he, signifying by what death he should be glorified. Maybe that's a little before that. He told Peter three times, feed my sheep. Now he did it three times because Peter denied him three times. So three times he told Peter, he said, do you love me? I guess I should go back to the 15th verse, kind of mixing up a little bit here. But he said to Peter in the 15th verse, Simon Peter, son of Jonas, lovest thou me more than these? And Peter said, yes, Lord, I love you. And he said, well, feed my lambs. And then he said to him again, to Peter, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me? And he said unto him, yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee. And then he said to him again, feed my sheep, Jesus said to him. And he saith unto him the third time, see, making up for the three times Peter had denied him, Jesus is now having Peter affirm three times, yes, I love you. He said, feed my sheep. Peter was grieved because he said it unto him the third time, and lovest thou me? And Peter said, Lord, thou knowest that all things, thou knowest that I love thee. Jesus saith unto him, feed my sheep. I want you to go out. It's going to be hard, Peter. It won't be easy. You're going to be run out of cities. You're going to be called names. You're going to be persecuted for this, your family too. But I want you to feed my sheep. Verily, verily, I say unto thee, when thou wast young, thou girdest thyself and walkest whither thou wouldest. But when thou shalt be old, thou shalt stretch forth thy hands, and another shall gird thee and carry thee whither thou wouldest not. Thus spake, this is Jesus saying what death Peter would die from, which Peter did die, by being crucified upside down. And then Jesus turned to John, and he said to John, he wanted him to be, let's just read it. Following which also leaned on his breast at supper, and he said to him, I want you to be, let's see, let's go here. If thou wilt, he shall tarry till I come. I guess it was Peter that said, what will John do? And Jesus said, I will, never mind what John will do. I'm going to take care of John. He will be my disciple too, and he will follow me. John never died a martyr's death. John was the only disciple that died a natural death. So Jesus was telling Peter, John will follow me too. He'll be one of my disciples, but your lives are different. You will be doing different mission work. There was a man one time when Jesus was coming into the city, and he was in a bad need. Let me see if I put it down. There was a man in the tomb. I was so tired last night, I guess I didn't write down where, yeah, I did. It was the 57th verse of, let me go to that. It was a man, he was in the tomb, and he was possessed of the devil. Remember that story? And when the disciples came upon him, and he was crying out, and he could not control himself, and he was possessed of the devils, and Jesus saw that man. Now everybody ran from him. They were afraid. They did not know what to do because he had such bad spirits in him that it was frightening to all the people. And so it was that whenever Jesus saw this man in the tomb coming out and he hollered at Jesus, Jesus was not afraid of this man, was he not? But he spoke to the man. I thought it was in Matthew, but I'm not coming up with it. It was the man in the tomb that was speaking to, and the swine was right there. I want to bring out the thought how Jesus was able to bring that man and deliver him. And so it is today. You know, Jesus had the power to deliver that man from a tomb that was different. That man was bound by spirits. That man was bound by the devil. And there are many, many people that are not in a physical tomb as far as being physically dead. But there are people that are bound by spirits. And they are in a tomb. They're dead. They're not able to deliver themselves from what the devil has trapped them in. The devil's got them into traps and snares. Sometimes they don't even recognize that they're in these traps and these snares. Like this man, he knew he was being bullied by the devil, but he had yielded to the devil and he had so much evil in him, he had no way of delivering himself. And God had mercy upon him, and Jesus saw this poor man, and he spoke, and he told the devils to be still. And there was a herd of swine that was nearby, and the devil spoke back to Jesus and said, they wanted deliverance, where should they go? And Jesus put them in that herd of swine that was nearby, and that herd of swine, the devils were so powerful, they went into that herd of swine and they ran over the cliff and into the sea and were destroyed, which made the swine herdsmen very angry, and they didn't want Jesus then to come to that city. But Jesus delivered that poor man out of a tomb. He brought him forth, and the man wanted to follow Jesus. He was delivered. He was in his right mind. He came to them, and no doubt he ate with the disciples. But Jesus told him, he said, no, I want you to go back to the city where you came from. And I want you to witness that God, what God has done for you, that God was able to unbind those spirits, and that God has control and power over the devil. That we do not have to be bound by what the devil tries to bind people with, but we have deliverance through Jesus. And so that's what the man did. He went back to his hometown and stayed there and testified for Jesus what he had done to him. And the people, of course, were amazed to see this man in his right mind living among them. And I always have found that story very interesting, because today in our society there's so much death worship. I call it that. The bones in the skull. Spooky, eerie things that people like to look at and watch in the movies and stuff. That they seem to like glory or enjoy watching gory stuff. Do you see that? Do you notice that in our society? You know, I would never want to go to bed in a gown with bones and skull on it. But people do that. They have that. You can buy that, you know. Or things that are not, I would say, appealing. But yet our society tends to glory in that or think that's good. And it's an evilness around about us. But there's deliverance. There's deliverance through the power of Jesus. Jesus has power to deliver people from the tomb of sin. He has the way of bringing people to his table to eat. And at his table, where we can dine, there is good things all the time. There's the word of the scriptures, and then there's peace, and there's joy, and there's happiness, and then there's long suffering, and then there's patience, and there's mercy, and there's grace, all at the table that Jesus has spread for us. We don't have to be bound in the tomb of sin. And people out there don't have to be. If they want deliverance, that table is available for them too. May the Lord help us each one to keep that peace of God within us. Dine at his table, because there's so much richness there. Pray for me.